Hi guys, and welcome to episode 18 of Trust in the Process with myself, Deborah Chosen.
And me, Jamelia Donaldson.
Yeah, we like that. Guys, I am reaching you today actually from the Trezor Trust head office. I feel very, very fortunate, very, very blessed, very, very lucky to be surrounded by the lovely plants that I can see. We've got touches of pink going on, we've got the rose gold. If you follow the brand, you'll probably know these colours anyways. But most importantly, it's just a privilege to be able to have this conversation with Jamelia today. So I'm really looking forward to kind of sharing her story. But we'll get into that in just a moment. I'll be introducing her. But just before that, I wanted to introduce you guys to a little new segment, which I do want to be bringing onto the podcast. So every now and then I receive different messages from people kind of saying how TTP has blessed them, touched them, it's changed their life in any kind of way. Now, I want to give you guys an opportunity to basically tell those stories on the podcast. So if you do have any kind of testimonies, so to speak, that you'd like to share with me, then please be sure to send me an email at info@trustandprocess.co.uk. This can be in voice form, this can be in written form, whatever kind of works for you guys. Feel free to send that over to me so I can be sharing just kind of the goodness of what's really happening here and how y'all are being touched by it. So in the meantime, also be sure to continue to follow us at Trust in the Process Pod on Instagram. And then while you're there, I mean, you might as well also follow me at Deborah Chosen. And yeah, I think we're just going to go ahead and jump into the conversation. But thank you guys for your continued support and keep your comments coming, because I really appreciate hearing from you. So moving on to the biggie of this conversation, Jamelia, how are you doing?
I'm doing good, thank you. How are you?
Good. I'm well, thank you. I think one of the first things I kind of want to start with is talking about kind of where you began, because I think nowadays, obviously, I'll speak for myself. I look at you and I'm like, oh my gosh, this girl is killing it, doing amazing things, and receiving the acclamations for it that you deserve, you know. And when we see someone doing well, we kind of assume, okay, that was always their plan, to be doing the thing that they're doing, maybe from birth or from very young. She's always desired to be this entrepreneur. But I think it's really interesting to just take a look at kind of life before. So first and foremost, if you could just introduce yourself a little bit, tell us about who you are, and then we'll kind of go backwards.
Sure. So my name's Jamelia Donaldson. I'm founder and CEO of Trezor Trust and also co-founder of The Teen Experience. So Trezor Trust, for those that don't know, it's a monthly product discovery box for women and girls with naturally kinky curly hair. So every month you pay £20 and we introduce you to 4 to 6 full-size products. And The Teen Experience is a series of personal development workshops for black and mixed race teenage girls between the ages of 12 and 19. So that's pretty much what I do. Nice. As far as who I am, I would say that I'm definitely a creative person, a very focused and a very passionate person. And that's about it.
Yeah, amazing. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about life before Trezor Trust and before the teen experience as we now know it to be, because I believe that you kind of had an initial plan of studying law, I'm right, right?
Yes.
And then somewhere along the lines that kind of changed. So if you could take me kind of through that and kind of what that journey was like in terms of your education.
Sure. So I might take you back even further. So totally. Childhood, I was always obsessed with hair. Like, if I was in class and there was a girl sitting in front of me, I was playing in her hair. My mum had long hair growing up, so I used to play in her hair. Aww. And then she cut it off so that I wouldn't. So I've always had a fascination with hair. Sure. And then I became very curious about why black hair didn't appear to be growing as fast as like Caucasian hair. And then that led me into like black hair forums and the very, very early days of the natural hair community. So I was like, okay, hair is an interest of mine. It's cool, but I'm not sure what I want to do with it, because at the time I thought I could only be a hairstylist.
Sure.
My mum was a head teacher. Okay. And she was like, well, you can own a hair salon, but you can't be a hairstylist, basically.
You need to be a business owner.
Yeah. And I was like, well, there goes my dream. So I was like, okay, I'm not going to do that. And then I was like, okay, what's the next best thing for me to do? And academically, I had always been really strong. So I was like, oh, well, people that are good at school, they usually become lawyers. So I was like, yeah, I'm gonna become lawyers. I'm excellent at arguing. So
that's what they tell us when we're growing up.
Right? Yeah. So I was like, yeah, this is clearly the career for me. So let me become a lawyer.
Yeah.
And then I didn't decide to do A levels, I decided to do the International Baccalaureate, which is 7 subjects. Okay. And I was drawn to it because it had international in the title.
Sure.
And travel is a huge part of who I am. It's what I love.
Okay.
So the fact that it was international, I was like, oh, this is brilliant. That means that I can go anywhere in the world and my certifications will be recognised.
That's clever.
So I decided to do the IB. And then in order to get into Aston University, where I went and studied law, I needed 34 points.
Got you.
But when I graduated and I finished with the IB, I got 32 points. Oh, it was French that messed me up. So I was
and
like...
do you even use it now? Like, do you?
Well, I wish I could, okay. But it's okay, no I don't. I'm determined to learn it just because. But exactly. So because I didn't get into the law program, I was like, oh, I don't really want to go to another university because I had set my sights on Aston.
Okay.
I wanted to move to Birmingham. I liked everything about the uni. Mm. So I was like, I'm going to have to compromise and do a different course.
Okay.
So I decided to do business and international relations. Okay. Again, international.
Mm-hmm.
And then business, because I was like, why not? Like, I guess everyone needs business skills.
That's clever thinking, yeah.
Yeah. So I'd done the IB, then I'd done business and international relations.
Okay.
And that, I feel like that was a divine intervention that I did not get onto the law degree.
Mm.
Because the path that I went down through doing business took me on a completely different journey.
Mm.
Introduced me to some of the most influential people I know now. Took me around the world.
Yeah.
So I'm so, so grateful that I didn't get onto the law degree.
Yeah,
and I actually went down the business route.
Business route. Was it everything you expected it to be? The business world or what the degree kind of gave
business
you.
Was really boring.
Was
like
it?
I didn't like it, but it was very challenging and I like being challenged.
Okay.
Then international relations, I didn't like it until final year when we actually got to dictate what we wanted to write about.
I can relate.
And then I was able to like write about very controversial topics that I was passionate about, like race relations around Europe. I think my favorite essay was probably like a comparison of Martin Luther King and Malcolm X.
Wow.
Which was really, really
That's
good.
Yeah.
So I liked the creative freedom that I got through writing for international relations.
Okay.
And I appreciated the challenge that business gave me.
Mm.
But I didn't necessarily enjoy business, I would
got
say.
You. Okay.
So while I was studying, I went to Uganda for a month to do some volunteering.
Okay.
I went to Beijing for a month to study PR and marketing. And then I went to New York for just under a year to study entertainment and fashion PR.
Wow. And all of this was whilst you were studying?
While I was studying. So I took a placement year.
Okay.
And then that allowed me to do New York and Beijing. And then I think I'd done Uganda on one of the summers.
Okay.
So by the time I'd finished university, I had like a lot on my CV.
Mm.
Oh, wait, no, I'm missing a part. I'd done Beijing, I'd done New York, and then I had a month to spare when I got back to London.
Okay.
And that's when I interned at an asset management firm. And that was my introduction to the corporate world.
Okay.
So once I graduated, I already knew that I was going back to that job because they offered me the job when I was there in the summer.
I see, okay.
So I didn't have corporate experience until I got there, but
wow.
I feel like all of the experiences that I had before made me a very interesting candidate because
sure.
I had a lot to talk about.
Got you. And do you feel like travel is what, to an extent, really played a part in terms of making you
Absolutely.
More employable? Yeah.
Being adaptable, being aware, being privy to different cultures. Having stories to tell, different experiences.
Mm.
And you know in interviews, they love to ask you to give examples.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I could give the most abstract example and then the conversation can go completely left.
Yeah, and that's what engages them.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think it definitely helps.
Okay, that's interesting. Okay, so let's go backwards a little bit. So of course, like you said, you had this passion for hair from a very young age.
Yeah.
Always looking at girls' hair, touching girls' hair.
Mm-hmm.
Forced your mom to cut off her hair, X, Y, Z. Right, and then at this point, you're now working in the corporate world. For how long were you within kind of asset management?
I was approaching 3 years in the graduate scheme.
Okay.
So just before I hit 3 years,
okay.
I left. Yeah.
Got you. Okay. So at this 3 year point, what kind of inspired you to go back and to kind of dig back into this true passion that you'd always had? Because I imagine, well, I'm even aware in asset management, you were doing well, you know, by any stretch of imagination, you were a success, you know, you were earning well, you're doing the whole corporate life thing, you know, the thing that a lot of us kind of dream of. Exactly. The city girl dream.
Yeah.
When did you kind of say to yourself, okay, it's time for me to kind of dig back into the thing that I'm, another thing maybe that I'm truly passionate about and birth that?
It wasn't like a split second decision, like one day I woke up and I had an epiphany. It was like a gradual process. So when I was in New York, when I was in university, that's when I was exposed to subscription boxes.
Okay.
Because in the States, Birchbox had just launched, Glossy Box was launching, Dollar Shave Club was hugely successful at the time. So there were loads of examples of subscription boxes. And then when I got back to the UK, I realized that there weren't any. So ever since that point going forward until that point when I actually left my job, I had been like plotting, researching, laying the foundations for me to actually launch Treasure Trust.
Okay.
And I launched Treasure Trust like 8 months before I quit.
Wow,
so it's okay. Not like I quit and then I launched Treasure Trust and it was wildly successful. That is not the story. The story is I launched Treasure Trust while I was at work, literally on the side of my desk. Every day I was posting on the Instagram page, emailing clients, taking calls, dealing with customer service. And then on the weekends I was doing the shipping. I was packing up my car with boxes and driving to the post office. It was wild.
And then still going to work on Monday.
And still going to work
on
Monday.
And I imagine the hours in the firm
were insane.
Yeah.
I was doing 7 a.m. to 7 p.m.
So how did you find the time, please? Because some people out here, we're doing it 9 to 5 and we're trying to have our side hustle on the side and it feels as if the evening is gone by the time you get home at night. So how did you manage your time?
Relentlessness. Like, you have to be relentless because unless you really, really want to do what you're doing, it is exhausting. And even when you really want to do it, it is still exhausting. So train journeys are amazing times. That was usually like my research period. In the mornings, I trained my body to, well, my mum kind of made me be a morning person, if I'm being honest, because I had to go to piano and violin practice every single Saturday. But that kind of set the tone for my life and
Routine, I guess.
Yeah, being a morning person wasn't a struggle for me.
Okay.
So I could wake up at 4:35 and work on a pitch deck and send it to a client all before I've started getting ready to go to work. And then on the train I can be responding to emails and on the way back I can be doing the same thing. So literally any spare time I had, I was using it to build the business and like lay some foundations.
It's funny, as you're talking I'm just thinking, okay, you clearly are relentless as heck. Like you had kind of the endurance and the ability to keep pushing yourself. But I think for a lot of us, there comes a time, especially when we're starting something, where we kind of hit a sort of breaking point, especially when you're trying to manage a full-time role and you're trying to build this dream on the side. I'm sure you're familiar with burnout. You know, we've all been there. How, if you ever did experience that, how did you kind of come out of that? And did you make any changes to your routine or to boundaries or anything like that that kind of helped you to kind of live a healthier lifestyle in that sense?
I think someone asked me not too long ago, how did I manage to balance everything? And I was like, balance went out the window.
Got you.
But it had to. I wouldn't recommend it now, but for me, I know that's what took me where I needed to go and took me over the edge. But it was terrible. Like, the breaking point for me was when I started losing weight, my skin got really bad. And I was having, like, anxiety attacks over the smallest things. Like, one morning, I couldn't find my car key, and I lost it. And I was like, you need to get yourself together, and something needs to change. So it was a choice between following the corporate, or climbing the corporate ladder, which, to be honest, didn't look that exciting to me. Or I can take a risk, because I didn't have any children, and I wasn't yet married, so I didn't have any major commitments, and build this business and see what happens. So I decided to do the former. But even with that, as time has progressed, I've realized that I did possess some privilege in being able to do that. So living at home is a huge privilege because I didn't have to pay rent. I didn't have to worry about that. Little things like buying food, I didn't really have to worry about that because my mum was able to do that for me. Even being able to start the business in my garage is, again, a privilege because some people don't even have a garage.
Space,
the space to carry stock. Then it moved from the garage to the front room. I'm lucky that my mum didn't kick me out.
I think every entrepreneur starts in their living room, honestly. I was talking to some salon owners and they're talking about when they're developing their product.
Listen, they couldn't
even get to the TV.
The whole house.
Goodness.
So I am aware that while it does sound like a great startup story, that I did have a few things that enabled me to do that.
Sure.
And I don't think that, especially as Black creatives and Black entrepreneurs, we shouldn't be too hard on ourselves because we don't come from privileged backgrounds. So the slight privilege that we do have, we should utilize. And if we don't possess the privilege of like living with parents or not having to worry about where your food's coming from, then we need to take it easier on ourselves and not compare ourselves to other people because we don't know what their starting point is.
And I'm so glad you said that because, you know, like I kind of said at the beginning, because we just see the finished result, so to speak, and we just see the Instagram highlight reel, we kind of think, oh, how did she get that? It must have been so easy for her. And then you exactly, then you begin to kind of bully yourself because you believe, why am I struggling with this? It is important to kind of recognize, okay, what privileges do I have, and play to those strengths.
Exactly.
And when you don't, do the best that you can with what you have. Exactly. So I really appreciate you kind of saying that. I want to talk a little bit about Treasure Tress because what I found really interesting, I don't know if you remember this, I feel like everyone had a different relationship with like when they went natural or when like a whole natural movement became a thing, so to speak. So for me, I'll speak for myself. I probably was like way behind you because you're probably on it way before me. Okay, so I'll kind of speak for myself. I think when I first saw there being kind of a resurgence of people going natural and really investing in their hair care, it was probably between 2011, 2010-ish for me, kind of. It was towards the tail end of university and I actually did the big chop in uni. Some people have a similar story. Yeah, it wasn't really by choice. I'm gonna be honest, my hair was damaged, relaxer had done its dirtiest job on me and I just had to go. But I remember kind of watching, you know, Patricia Bright when she was still doing the natural hair growth show, which I don't think even a lot of people know, which is wild, natural, you know, all of these different brands, Gabe Fix, etc. And I think what I find really interesting is you were able to recognize that, okay, there's a gap here, right? But I think when some people look at an industry such as like the beauty industry, hair, they can tend to feel that, is there room for me and does the industry need what I have to offer, right? And I think that's why a lot of us kind of shrink into ourselves and don't put that thing forward. Was the threat of the industry being saturated ever a thing that you experienced? And if so, how did you navigate that? And if not, how did you know that kind of Treasure Tress was necessary for the industry?
I think from an outsider's view, the industry was saturated from a product standpoint in that there were a lot of options. But when I now look back at where we are now compared to back then, there wasn't a lot of options. Like today there's a lot of options and tomorrow there's going to be even more. So I noticed that we were overwhelmed with options for products. As far as subscription boxes, there had been a few makeup hair ones that would like pop up and then disappear. So there wasn't, it wasn't saturated in the subscription box market for Black women. And I think that that was all about timing. So no, I think the market was definitely saturated at the time when it came to products, but it's becoming more and more saturated, which is what I absolutely love because I love trying new products.
That's good.
I love it when brands bring out new ranges. I love to see new ingredients. So I think the saturation, it's positive, but you have to spin it to be positive. So would I recommend someone go out and start a subscription box for natural hair for women, targeting women in Europe with naturally kinky curly hair? No, because the need has already been met. I had this conversation with Joycelyn from Afrocentrics, actually, because she was saying that she met this girl and the girl was like, oh, I love Jamina, I love what she's doing. I'm going to launch a business. I'm going to launch a subscription box for natural hair. And Joycelyn was like, well, if you love what she's doing, why don't
how
you just
support?
Right. Like, why don't you approach her and see how you could join her team something else? So I feel like I don't want to be the person that says, if there's someone out there doing what you want to do, then don't do it. Because I don't want to be that person. But I think just be strategic about things. Like, if it's a service and the service is already being fulfilled, then why would you recreate the wheel? But at the same time, if you're in a market whereby, I don't know, you're a photographer, there's never too many photographers. And as long as you have your unique selling point, then you're good to go. So I think a market being saturated shouldn't turn you away as long as you know what's going to make you stand out from the market.
That's key. That's key. I agree. And that's a really great segue actually into kind of where I wanted to go next. Because, okay, so my Nick2 has a saying where she basically, she talks about her superpower quite a lot. So she says, her, for example, she says her superpower is time, that she believes she's a master of time. So she's really able to kind of get the most out of her day. You were talking earlier about, okay, when you're building something, even if it does exist previously, you just need to understand what your USP is, what your unique selling point is. Now, for yourself as a person, because obviously this brand wouldn't exist without Jamelia behind it, what would you say your superpower is?
I think my superpower is connecting people. So the minute I meet someone, I'm already thinking, oh, do you know what? You should know this person because you can work on that. Or, I don't know, I guess you just, it's either connecting people or synthesis. Like, we can be having a conversation and then I'll be connecting something that you have said in this conversation to an idea that I had previously to come up with a new idea. So between the two is connecting people.
Mm.
I think I'm very good at bringing people together, especially women together, and building communities. Mm-hmm.
Yes, you are.
And then, thank you.
Latino experience.
Yeah. And then, second to that, I think I'm very good at like synthesizing what people say, drawing out some strong points, and then thinking about how we can take it further by combining it with something else.
Got you. Do you think that gift for synthesizing, do you think your education had any kind of element towards inspiring that, or even maybe your corporate experience, or do you think it's kind of just a natural kind of God-given gift that you have?
The connection, I think, is natural.
Sure.
Synthesizing, I think it's kind of taught. I think that was learned.
Yeah. I feel like it is something that many people aren't able to do because they yet haven't been taught it or had to learn how to
I had to learn.
Okay. What kind of situations made you
I think it was definitely my degree, the international relations side, because we were reading journals upon journals upon journals, and I needed to summarize it and then walk away with what the lessons were that, or the theories were that I wanted to use.
Sure.
And I feel like that's even a skill that I use now. When I read, I'll often post on Instagram a summary of the book, and it's for other people, but mostly for myself, just so that I can walk away knowing that I actually gained something from this book. And if I'm not able to summarize it, that means I didn't understand it.
Okay.
And there's a saying, I'm not going to say it word for word, but it essentially says that if you can't explain something to a two-year-old, then you didn't understand it yourself.
Mm.
So, you know, when you ask someone to explain something and they give you like a lengthy, very wordy description, and you're like, you didn't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, no, yeah.
Because if you did, then you would have been able to do it in simple terms.
Yeah, it's like how people say, when you have your own brand, you need to have like an elevator pitch, so to speak. You need to be able to describe your brand in three words, for
example.
Yeah,
exactly. So, yeah, I think definitely university taught me that, and then I adopted that as far as how I read, and now how I engage in conversation and build relationships and think of new ideas. I think that has definitely helped me with that.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I think probably more than you may even realize, that's probably played a huge part in helping you get to where you are, because I think just in terms of the connection side, I think what probably kind of set you apart was when you were in these corporate roles, I imagine it went beyond just, oh yeah, Jamina, that employee, but you were probably making deeper connections, significant connections. You're probably wise as to who to connect with, how to connect, and those are the things that kind of push you forward and kind of impact you in a way that when you now become your own business owner, you're able to be able to kind of demonstrate that with others, I think.
Absolutely.
And I'm sure even within being the leader of your team now as well, that connection element is something that I think is still kind of visible, because you know, I look at the dynamics of your team that I can see at least through online, and it definitely, first of all, looks like a very fun place to work, but a place that also works hard, you know.
Everyone on the team works incredibly hard, and I'd say that everyone's very creative, and everyone kind of possesses that same skill.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's like an effect of us all rubbing off on each other, or if it's just something that I notice in people, and that's what I gravitate towards, why I want to hire them.
Yeah.
But everyone on the team is sick at like that's hearing good. Something and then being like, oh, we should connect it with this to do this.
Yeah.
So that's good. Yeah, everyone on the team kind of possesses that skill, I would say.
Yeah, you've hired well. I want to, for a moment, just kind of go into community and talk about kind of giving back, because I know that that's something that you do very, very well through everything that you do ultimately, but mainly, of course, I want to talk about the teen experience.
Yeah.
So I want to take you back a little bit just to an Instagram post that you made, and I want to read that caption to you. Let's see how you synthesize this experience, shall we? So this was actually, I think, roughly about 2 months ago after attending the House of Parliament event, where you were discussing diversity, inclusion, and unconscious bias.
Yeah.
So you wrote the following on giving back. You said, the key takeaway for me was the responsibility we, regardless of size or position, have to take younger people on the journey with us through internships, work experience, workshops, whatever we can do, we must do. In other words, whatever we can do, we must do. That kind of, the fact that it's almost not an option. It's like we owe it to younger people to kind of bring them up. I just want you to talk for a little bit about kind of how that perspective has fueled what you do through the teen experience, because I believe that the two must be very much so connected.
Yeah. I feel like when you're given a lot, or you've been put in a position to help people, you have no choice but to help people. And I feel like, obviously, for me growing up, there weren't that many Black British females for me to look up to. And if there were, then they weren't in arm's reach. And I feel like it's very important to be accessible, maybe not to everyone, but to younger people especially, because they need to see people that look like them, sound like them, dress like them, have the same interests as them, listen to the same music as them, for them to be able to see, wow, like, I can really, really do this. And for me, Black women have helped me, and Black women still help me, and my whole business is supported by Black women. So the least that I can do is give back to, to girls that are going to become Black women. So yeah, I think that's pretty much it. Like, to who much is given, much is expected. So if we've been given the privilege of being able to own and run a business, then we kind of have to pass it on.
I love that. I love that. For those that aren't maybe familiar with the teen experience, tell us a little bit about how you do kind of facilitate those kind of connections and growth within these young women. So how does the teen experience work?
So the teen experience, I'll take you through the history of it really briefly. So I had done a afternoon tea party for mums and daughters, like, way back. This was in the first year of running Treasure Trust, simply because I felt like, as Black women, we very rarely go out with our daughters for afternoon tea.
That's such a good point.
Especially in central London.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, this will be a new experience for my subscribers. I think I had like 1,000 followers then, and my 1,000 followers. And about 30 women came out, which is quite substantial. And it was really, really cute. My niece came and she absolutely loved it. And I think for her, it was the first time being in a room filled of Black girls. And she was just having the time of her life. And then I started to think, where was I as a teen? So as an adult, I go to natural hair events and like trade shows and industry events. Teens, where do they go? As a teen, I went to youth clubs, community clubs, like that kind of thing. Used to play outside. But teens of today, they don't have those spaces because they've all been shut down. It's not that safe to play outside anymore. And so where do these teen girls go? They just they go from being young girls who there's activities for, then there's a gap, and then they're expected to be these fully functioning adults. Like, what happens in between? So I was like, I'm going to start these workshops, and I wanted to focus on everything from finance to beauty, hair care, setting goals, vision boards, literally everything. And so I emailed a ton of bloggers that I was connected with through the natural hair scene. And I was like, hey, would you be interested in running a workshop on this? And I tried to touch on things that weren't natural hair. So although they're a natural hair blogger, an example being Simone Powderly, I know that she was greatly into mental health. So I approached Simone and I was like, hey, I want you to run a mental health workshop for me. And she was like, hey, I don't want to just run a workshop with you. Like, I actually want to help you build it. And I was like, wonderful. Then I don't have to do
that. That's so much more than you asked for.
So together, and we definitely cannot take all the credit because there's about 10 women who pour their time and energy into this. We host monthly workshops. So last year we had it just throughout summer, and this year we've done literally one every single month of the year. And it will either take place in like a company office. So Propercool lent us their head office for a while, which was really kind of them. While Nails gave us their Soho salon for pretty much all of last year. And then this year we're kind of floating around between different venues. But we try to switch up the structure of it. So sometimes it can be a workshop where we've got like three different women coming in to talk about careers, for example. So one will do about an hour on CVs, another will do an hour on skills, another will do an hour on, I don't know, money management. And then other times we'll have a brunch where it will literally be about 15 teens and about 10 grown women, or grown women us. And we'll sit and we'll discuss everyday things. So the last one that we had was called, the theme was actually influencing. And we had two bloggers over from the States. We had Curly Edgy and Crystal. And Chris Castles, that's their Instagram name, Chris Castles. And they wanted to talk about the hashtag actually influencing. So they, as influencers, understand the importance of their role and the responsibility that they carry. And they wanted to communicate that regardless of the size of your platform, you have a responsibility to actually influence. So even if it's just in your classroom, amongst your peers, you can actually influence them. So we spoke about friendships. We spoke about relationships in quite a lot of depth.
Of course. That topic always comes up.
What else did we discuss? And then we played a few icebreaker games where the girls shared the experiences of like school, whether they were being bullied or any insecurities they had. And then we were able to draw similarities between certain girls so that they could go off and have private conversations about different
and
things.
And they're not alone as well.
right?
Yeah.
So while the topic of the workshop is really important, I think more important is the connections made and just us making sure that the girls feel comfortable, they can be relaxed and they can be themselves.
I love that.
And I think the most rewarding thing for me has been the last workshop. We had two girls who came to like the first ever teen experience when they were like 14.
Wow.
And now they're 17.
That's crazy.
And they are some woke women.
Really?
Honestly. The things that come out of their mouth, people. I'm like, wow.
Even I didn't know that.
I'm like, how did you even think of that? But they are some incredible women.
Serious.
I don't think that we can take all the credit, but they have told us that us simply creating a space for them is important.
Yeah.
And we've introduced them to like high class salons like WAR.
Yeah.
We've introduced them to offices like Propercorn. How else would they have got in there if we didn't get them in there?
That's so powerful.
Huge shout out to the styling for the hookup there. but it's just about exposing young black girls to relationships, friendships, and experiences that they wouldn't otherwise get.
Yeah.
And one of the most touching comments, which I also posted about on Instagram,
one of
the teens said that she'd never actually seen black female friendships before, and the teen experience was her first example of sisterhood.
It's crazy,
and I was
it?
Like, that is so sad.
Yeah,
but I'm very, very proud that we've been able to give her that experience and be that example for her.
That's so significant.
Yeah,
so, so significant. And I wonder what kind of change that will kind of create for her in terms of how she views black women moving forward.
We've had some teams that have been like, they're obviously black girls, but they said that they don't have a very good opinion of black girls because black girls have always been mean to them.
Yeah. I mean, it's something I would hear growing up. It wasn't necessarily my experience.
My lived experience, right? Yeah. So I was like, what? All of my best friends are black women.
And they're lovely.
But, yeah, right? Yeah, but they're like, no, like the black girls in my school, because, I don't know, I watch anime, they're not into it, and they say that I'm weird.
I'm not the stereotypical black girl.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, none of them are stereotypical
That's
black
beautiful.
Girls.
Yeah.
So they come, they get to see girls that are like them, girls that are different from them, but they're able to find a common ground, and I think it's amazing.
That's amazing. What has raising these girls in a sense through the teen experience, what has it taught you? Because I imagine, you know, there's a way that kind of the younger generation, without knowing it, teach us some things about ourselves as well.
Yeah.
So when you're watching these girls and when you're kind of listening to the words that they're saying, what have you kind of learned through the process?
Definitely the importance of community and like the role that we all have to teach and learn, because we're there effectively meant to be teaching these girls, but a lot of the time we're the ones that are learning from them. Organizing the teen experience has just made me trust, rely, and understand the necessity of having supportive, intelligent, reliable women around you, because without the whole, every single one of them, whether or not they come to the workshop that month or not, they're introducing us to different brands. They're making sure that social media is up to scratch. They're telling other people about it. So I think it reinforced for me the importance of community, which is ironic because it's something that I kind of live and breathe.
It comes back to kind of the heart of who you are.
Yeah. And then I think probably accepting people as they are and not judging people.
Yeah.
Because naturally, I think I can be quite judgmental.
Sure.
And hearing these girls' experiences from being judged definitely makes me check myself.
Yeah.
And be like, that first thought that you had, get rid of it because it's rude.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
well, not true.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I think definitely accepting people as they are and not judging people on face value.
Yeah, okay, that's powerful. As we're in the office, I feel like it's only right that we talk a little bit about the culture here at Treasure Tress. Okay,
yes.
So I have the privilege of obviously sitting down with you. So when you kind of went about building this company, did you sit down and kind of decide what you wanted the company culture to be, or was it something that sort of found itself as you were hiring and as you were kind of bringing people on the team?
I think it found itself.
Mm.
I didn't really plan to hire someone as soon as I did.
Oh, really?
But she was so good that I had to hire her.
Okay.
And then it was kind of my personal relationships which dictated who I hired next.
Okay.
And I feel like you find your tribe, and I feel like I found my tribe. And then I sat down one day and I was like, I'm going to do the culture, vision, mission of the company.
Okay.
And I kind of formalized what we already had going on.
Sure.
And now that's just a document that I can share with people when they come on the team. Like,
so they know this is
by the way,
yeah,
we work hard,
yeah,
but we turn up.
Yeah.
Like, it's all about sisterhood. Yes. It's about collaboration.
Yeah.
It's about supporting women. It's about representing women. It's about educating women. And it's about sharing. So I think it kind of, I feel like the culture of...
Kind of organically
grew. It was kind of innate in the DNA of it all.
I think that's probably sometimes the nicest way for it to be, you know, because it's organic, like you said, it's authentic.
Yeah.
And then it's just a case of finding, like you said, your tribe, the people that can actually align with that.
Exactly.
And kind of just continue to cultivate that environment.
And another thing that really gets on my nerves about when people set up businesses is people will be like, yeah, write down the culture, XYZ, but... If you don't have any experience building a business, and if you haven't worked in that many workplaces, what are you writing down on this piece of paper?
What do you know about culture?
Like, those kind of things frustrate me. So, again, it's about allowing yourself to have somewhat of an experience and then putting yourself under the pressure to, like, formalise it.
Yeah.
But writing 10-page business plans and then writing a further 5 pages on culture sounds ridiculous to me, because what are you writing down without any experience?
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that's probably why... what you have here works so well, because you took the time. It doesn't sound like you were in a rush, so to speak, to kind of define it for yourself. You were just conscious of, okay, the kind of people you were bringing on, and then you were like, oh, this is the culture that I have. And by the time you're writing up, it was probably what you saw when you looked around anyways, but just maybe more refined. So I think that's powerful. And I wonder, like, when it comes to hiring, when it comes to kind of building a team, what have you found to be the hardest thing about hiring? Because I hear, obviously I'm not a business owner yet, but I hear that hiring can be one of the hardest things about having a business. Now, when I look at you and I look at your team, this is exactly what I'm thinking. I don't feel like you've had that kind of experience.
No, I can honestly say I haven't had that experience.
Really?
I had a few bad experiences with interns really early on.
Okay.
But once I found the right intern and then was able to change her into an employee, I kind of, I don't know. What I should have said about one of my skills is I'm able to see qualities and skills in people that they can't see in themselves. So one example being Leah, who is our digital communications manager, and she also manages some of the Treasure Trust talent. The way that she takes pictures on her phone are insane. Like, we'll be sitting in a warehouse that looks run down and Leah will take a super artsy photo and you're I'm like I didn't even see this. And then I was do you know what? She's got an eye. I want her to run our social media. And the minute I hired her, everyone was like, Jamila, who's doing your social media? Because it looks wicked. And I was like, yeah.
I got that right.
So I think that I'm quite good at spotting traits in people and helping them strengthen them. So I also go by vibes a lot as well. Like, if I meet you, we vibe, then I'm going to take it seriously. I've never done formal interviews.
Okay.
I've always learned on
my process
hiring process is tapping into my friends and
family. So you tend to build from your network.
I build from my network, 100%.
What do you think has been the benefit of that?
You know where people are coming from. You know how they think. You know how they act. You are their reference. So you've had an experience with them, which means that you can speak to their character. It's cheaper.
Amen.
And I think it's easier to trust people that you know. Like, Siobhan's our brand manager, and I've known Siobhan since I was like 10. And she was in a sales role, and I was like, do you know what, Siobhan's sick at sales, but even more than sales, she's sick at building relationships.
Okay.
So she's our brand director, because as a brand director you need to you need to be able to sell, but you need to be able to build relationships with brands. So
you saw that in her, and you were like,
we need that.
Yeah, come on, girl. You turned your job. Come on.
So I think sometimes we overcomplicate things. Like, if you have friends that are good at certain things, I'm not saying build a business with them, because that can be quite tricky.
Yeah.
But if you already have a business, or you're building a business and you have some capital to bring them on, then why wouldn't you bring on someone that you already know? And especially if they're not excelling the way that you know they could do in their personal careers, then why wouldn't you want to help them?
Yeah, give them the opportunity to shine. Yeah.
So I feel like, as much as hiring people is great for me as a business, for me it's not a one-way thing. Like, I want to see these women become even better women by working with me.
Yes.
It's not like I see that they're super talented and I want them on my team, which I do.
Yeah.
But I'm invested in them as people. And I think that's the benefit of being hired by someone that you know, and also hiring someone that you know, and that you know that you two are genuinely looking out for each other.
Yes, it's an even exchange, which I think is beautiful. Yeah,
yeah,
I love that. And I wonder as well, kind of just on the topic of building a team, so when I look at the team, like we spoke about it, obviously most of them are your friends or have come through kind of natural connections, your network. How on earth do you kind of create the line in between being someone's friend and being a manager or being their colleague, you know, because I think maybe for some people when they're thinking, oh my gosh, they see a friend and they think you'd be great on my team, but you're my friend, and they can't kind of see past that. How do you navigate kind of balancing the two? Because you've been able to create this environment where everyone can be themselves, they're authentic. I believe that there's genuine love there. Do you know what I mean? They're sisters, but then you're still boss.
Yeah.
So how do you navigate that? And is it ever difficult?
I think I have the conversations, well, I know, I have the conversation really early on.
Okay.
Like, look, obviously, we're friends.
Mm-hmm.
I've known you from day. However, the role that I have for you is this, and this is what I need you to do.
Mm.
And then I just think if you're very clear, like, you know, they know what they're being measured on.
Mm.
They know what I'm looking out for. They know what they're responsible for.
Mm.
And they know that if they don't do it, then they're not only letting themselves down, but they're letting me down.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of it, I would like to think it comes from me leading by example.
Mm.
Like, I work really hard.
Mm.
So I think the girls on my team know that the least they can do is work really hard as well. Like, if you need help, I'm here to help.
Yeah.
But at least give your effort. Yes. Give me an A in effort.
Yeah.
Because I'll give you a star in effort.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of it is to do with respect. Like, do you respect the work that I do? Do you respect what I've built so far?
Mm.
And do you respect the journey that I went on to make this possible?
Mm.
If so, then you'll work hard.
Mm-hmm.
Do I respect the woman that you are? Do I respect the skills that you've developed? And do I respect the woman that you could
be?
And you will be? Yeah. Yes. So let's both work hard.
Yeah.
Because if we don't work hard, then how are we getting paid?
Yeah. At the end of the day, bills gotta get paid. Okay, so kind of moving towards closing now, hearing your journey, I'm aware that you're also a believer, right? And and when you kind of see someone doing well, I think oftentimes we begin to feel that a lot of it came from our hard work and came from, you know, we attributed to ourselves and came from what we did with our hands. I'm interested, if it has had any kind of influence, what role would you say your faith has played in terms of helping you to be persistent and kind of consistent in your journey? Because business is not easy.
No, it's not.
How does faith kind of come into things for you?
I'll say that faith's an interesting one for me. I don't go to church. I can honestly say that I haven't been to church in about 5 years.
Yeah.
And the constructs of religion don't really work for me. But one thing that I do know is how to listen.
Yes.
And I know how to observe, and I know how to follow. I just know how to follow signs. So like, I will become frustrated. Like, I was frustrated that I didn't get onto the law degree. But there was a part of me that knew that wasn't for you. Like, you were made to go this way.
Yeah, like an intuition.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I think, I don't know, some people can call it divine order. Some people can call it intuition. Some people call it signs. I think regardless of the language that's used, I know, well, I hope that I know. And I'm trying to constantly improve on listening and trusting that things are going to work out.
Yes.
And I'm doing good work. And I feel like as long as I'm doing good work, good things will happen.
Yes, yeah.
So I think I'm like morally led as well.
Yes.
Like, I'm a firm believer in karma. And I'm a firm believer in like putting out positive things and positive things being attracted to you.
Yeah.
And being intentional, writing things down plain and clear. I would say I probably do follow a lot of religious scripture. But just not in the traditional religious form.
Sure.
So I would say that it's hugely guided me, and I'm always working on being guided even more.
That's
But also putting in the work, because nothing happens if you don't work.
This is it. You can attend all the services. If you don't kind of put your hand into it, nothing's going to happen. So I think that's beautiful. Looking back through your journey, what would you say has been your proudest moment?
There's a few things. My first proudest moment was my first niece, Maya. She was in the bath and my sister-in-law was washing her hair, and she pulled a piece of hair like to see how long it was gotten, and my niece started like screaming like, no, I don't want my hair straight, I want it big and messy like Auntie Jam. And I was like, wow, at that age I would have done anything for straight
hair. Yeah, we all wanted to relax.
There we go. So for her to be, she was like powerful. Three at the time.
Wow.
So for her to be three and to already know that she's got really nice hair, and although my hair was not messy.
Yeah, sis, change that word, okay?
She doesn't mind. Like, she's seen an example of what she can look like. Or just, like, someone that looks like her embracing their natural texture.
That's beautiful.
So that was the first sign for me, like, wow, like, it's working. What you were intending to do worked.
And representation matters,
There we go. Yeah. And then I think daily I'm extremely grateful for the women that I work with. Because, like when I first wrote down, this was like before I even launched Treasure Chest, no, shortly after I had the idea for Treasure Chest, like I want a team of magical black women.
Mm.
And I was like, Jameela, I don't know how you're going to do this. You're not even paying yourself. In fact, you're paying for the business from your savings account.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know how you're going to do it, but I just have a feeling that you will.
Mm.
So like even that picture there is so symbolic for me because I'm like, wow, like we've really done that.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
We really are helping each other become better women.
Yes.
And we're also impacting other women.
Mm.
And it's when we get messages from women like, oh, you guys are so cute. You guys show us what sisterhood means.
Yes.
Like, you don't really care about us. I'm like, wow, it's really happening.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
What I wanted
Impact
to happen
is
really happening.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'd say that the proud moments are almost daily because when I'm sitting there and I'm like, on my laptop, head down.
Yeah.
Probably not getting involved in the jokes like I was saying because I was in focus mode.
Work mode, yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I'm like, wow, I'm really proud of
what
yeah, I'm
done.
Really proud of us. And
yeah.
I'm even proud of like how we became in contact because Christelle, who was my intern and then my first hire, she reached out to me and was like, hey, I love your business, would love to get involved.
Mm.
And I was like, oh, here we go.
Here we go with this process.
And then when I met her, I was like, wow, she's really serious.
Wow.
And then I started working with her and I was like, no, like I need to hire you and I need to be able to pay you.
That's amazing.
And then I was like, by the time you graduate, I'm going to give you a grad role with a competitive salary. And I was like, again, I don't know how I'm going to do it. But I'm going to make sure it happens because you deserve
that.
That
is speaking by faith.
So,
wow, yeah.
Mm. I do that a lot. So I think, yeah, it's a daily thing of just being like proud of what we're creating and just seeing the ripple effects on what impact we're having.
That's amazing. So looking forward, what do you hope the future kind of holds for Jameela, Treasure Trust, the teen experience? What would you love to see in the future?
I would love to see the impact that Treasure Chest has had in London and the UK also take place all over Europe.
Yes.
Because Christelle's actually from Switzerland.
Oh, okay.
And she always reminds us that, guys, the world does not start
and begin
in London.
London.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, we have subscribers in over 26 countries, and I would love to be able to be physically present in those 26 countries with head offices, with events, with pop-up shop experiences, all of that in the 26 different countries,
amazing.
If not more. And then also follow that up with the teen experience. But I would love to have women in every city that run their own teen experiences for local girls because we
that's
can't do
powerful.
It.
Yeah, that's powerful. So you're empowering the community to actually give back to the community.
Absolutely.
I love that.
And then longer term, it's absolutely my goal to start buying some black-owned businesses and
yes.
just helping them get to the level that they need
Come
to
on.
Do. So especially black-owned haircare brands. There's so many good ones, but they don't have the access to capital, the resources, logistics, maybe even marketing know-how to get them to where they deserve to be. So for me, a huge goal of mine is to start acquiring some.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful. Jameela, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
I'm excited to kind of just see you continue to flourish. I think kind of my biggest takeaway from listening to this is the importance of connection. I think that's what I really, really took away from this. And I'm sure those that are listening also will have done so. And I believe that the connection you've been able to kind of build to this point are going to continue to take you further and further and will bring about that international kind of presence that you're talking about. So thank you for sharing your journey with us. I really
thank you for some great questions. I really enjoyed it.
You're welcome. You're super welcome. But for those of you that are listening, if you have enjoyed this conversation today, then please be sure to share your comments, let us know kind of what you took away from this conversation. Tweet me at Deborah Chosen, use the hashtag Trust in a Process Pod. Make sure that if you're listening on iTunes, then you give this podcast a rating. Go ahead and give your girl 5 stars, okay? Because it'll help me get out there. Also, be sure again to follow us at Trust in the Process Pod to hear a little bit more. We'll be posting more snippets from this conversation. And Jameela, where can we follow you? Where can we find out more about you, the brand?
So the main platform that I'm on is Instagram, and that's at Jameela is obsessed. Clearly, because anything I put my mind to, I become obsessed with. And also follow Treasure Tress on Instagram at Treasure Tress, on Facebook with Treasure Tress Box. And make sure you reserve the 22nd to the 24th of November to come down to our pop-up experience in East London to celebrate our 4th birthday.
Yes.
Tickets are available on Eventbrite. I think we're down to like the last 7 limited edition ones.
Okay.
But beyond that, we do have other tickets, which will give you a box for £20. You get to select 5 products of your own.
Stunning,
so you literally get to walk around the shop and build your own Treasure Trust
box.
I
like that.
And then if you come on the day, you'll pay £25 for a box. So you may as well buy a ticket in advance.
You heard the lady. Buy your tickets, guys. Definitely. All the information will be in the description. Jameela, thank you once again. To everyone that's listening, until next time, remember to continue to trust the process. And I'll see you guys in the next one.